Good evening. This is Mae Bressel on part two of broadcast number 654, June 18th, 1984. There was a story that came out just this weekend on the Korean jet based upon a defense magazine out of Great Britain. And I think the reason they must be investigating the Korean airline is that this is a very important story because Ronald Reagan is trying to push with William Casey and Vernon Walters and the CIA and the whole gang the bad, evil empire of the Russians, the attempted assassination of the Pope, to spend 2 years on twisting that around when they won't investigate the Nazi connections or the George Bush connections, say, to John Hinckley here, or the CIA connections to Aja. They're ignoring. They're trying to take the provocation of an airplane being blown up with 269 people by the evil Soviet Union, take the assassination attempt on the Pope by the evil Antichrist, KGB, and these are nails in our coffin that can trigger off World War III every time they come, and they're not going to let you forget them, and they control your history when they control your lives. So you have to remember that when, and the grenade invasion, the excuse was so feeble, it was the chance to reactivate the special forces, the Green Berets, to laud them. They separate them from the regular army, like the Wehrmacht was separated from the Lebensdart, the Waffen-SS. So the Grenada party story this last year that I've done extensive work on, the Korean airline story, and the shooting of the Pope have really taken a lot of detail to study, but they're so terribly important they must be updated. So I do want to run, as I say, today I'm just going to do as much as I can on the Korean airline because, again, it was in the news. San Francisco Chronicle has Korea jet snooping, British writer says. Well, when we have a break-in at the Watergate, it's called, you know, some kind of a little quirk. They play it down with words to make it look like it's a minor thing, make a joke out of it, and like a Max Sennett comedy when it isn't. But that's okay. We'll take the word snooping. The story in the paper, the South Korean airline shot down by Soviet fighters was on an intelligence mission to the using testing Soviet radar reactions. The magazine, the Defense, it's called Defense in Great Britain, is a very serious magazine. And there was an article in the Sunday Observer at great length about the defense report. It said the Boeing 707 that crashed out in the sea of Okhotsk, I haven't pronounced that right, but that's your spelling, killing 269 of the occupants, didn't have electronic eavesdropping in it or camera, but was steered deliberately, and listen to these words based upon another report from Great Britain, was steered deliberately into Soviet airspace so that Western intelligence could monitor the Soviet radar and electronic signals. Now, that's pretty hard to do with fail-proof equipment, so that steered deliberately are really hard words. Of course, the White House denied it. A man using a pseudonym, I can see why, PQ Man, claimed that a close-orbiting Ferret, F-E-R-R-E-T, capital F, spy satellite, and the just-launched Challenger, which we had going, the space shuttle, monitored the Korean airline jet. They were used to monitor it. You know, while they monitored it, they could have told it was off course if it wanted to. They knew where it was all along. But the magazine says that the entry with the Soviet radar range of the U.S., the RC-135 military aircraft, which used to be a Boeing airplane made into the military aircraft, and made by Boeing, the same company, is a similar profile to the commercial airline. So they aimed at getting the Russians to turn on their defense radar and the critical communication link between the Far East and Moscow. They triggered that out. Now, many of us have known that for a long time, but we didn't know, or maybe you didn't know, that the Challenger was above and the spy satellite was working along with them. The military plane flew out of the area, leaving its buddy all alone, and Ronald Reagan said that was miles away, like 75 miles away, while the orbiting spacecraft monitored Soviet signals concentrating on the airliner. Now, here's the airliner flying through the dark with a controversial congressman who's the president of the John Birch Society. John Birch was the first American killed in China by the Red Chinese. So now you have the president of the John Birch Society. You're going to test all this multi-billion-dollar equipment. You're going to let Buddy Boy sail off in the wild blue yonder because you haven't lost anything. You've gained mileage of propaganda. You've made mileage of committees protesting at the Olympics, the Korean airline. You have every speech of the president. The rabid right wing, remember the Korean Airlines. They got more mileage out of this, just as Hitler did in burning the Reichstag, than he did in rebuilding the building if he wanted it. If you could bomb the Capitol in Washington and say that leftist guerrillas did it, you would get your money back. Rebuilding it would be pennies compared to the propaganda mill. So off it goes into the wild blue. This is a new study done in England. There was another story 2 weeks before that, May 23rd, 1984. Soviet general linked the Korean jet is dead. This is the general, Colonel General Semyon Romanov. That's easy to spell. Some names aren't. 62 years old, my age. He died in the line of duty. He was in East Germany. Keep in mind that that's a term I learned from David Emery. Keep in mind. I was listening to tapes last week on from KFJC, and I that term stayed in my brain. Okay. Romanov was from East Germany at the time he died. They wouldn't say where he died or how he died, but that's a term used if you're killed in an accident. There are many people in East Germany, Poland, Romania, and Czechoslovakia that belong to the Reinhard Galen, William Casey. Casey was behind the lines, and the CIA, the OSS CIA, that can do jobs for us if or for anybody they want in those countries if they want to wipe them out. He was chief of staff of the Air Defense Forces, part of the Soviet military. He was the person who was accounting for the Korean airline from September the 1st on. General Romanov, for 4 days, was the spokesman. He said the South Korean airline flew without lights, that its outline resembled the RC-135, which the new study in Great Britain has done. It's almost a year since then. That an American reconnaissance plane was used to patrol off the Soviet Union's coast, the 135, and it resembled this transport, this civil airport plane, the civilian plane, or it should be a civilian, it wasn't really, followed alongside and then split. He said that. The general said that a Soviet fighter intercepted the airline, fired tracer shells. The warnings were ignored. General Romanov said that the fate of the airline, the ultimate fate of the airliner, was unclear. The initial statement he left was the ultimate fate was unclear the first time. The definitive account was presented 5 days later by another high-ranking general who gave the account of the United States going into their territory, and that it was necessary to do what they did and warn them and try to tell them. And General Romanov was one of the most honored people in the Soviet Union. He had 36 medals. He worked against the Nazis. He'd been in the armed forces since 1940 and served with great valor and, as I say, got the highest honors, the Hero of the Soviet Union, the country's highest military award. Well, he was saying, as soon as the accident of the plane going down took place, exactly what was happening. That was September the 1st. Now a group of people all over the world are investigating that airplane crash and coming up with the same conclusions. But the interesting thing, and I'm going into details on this, the London Times had a two-part article on the Korean airline based on a lot of investigation for the past 8 months. And the two-part article began May the 20th. And the second part is May 27th. And sandwiched in between there, on May 23rd, General Romanov was dead. Just days, the day after the British report in the London Times came out, he never lived long enough to say, "I told you so." This is what the Soviet Union was saying. The scientists and the Defense Department of London, I suppose, wants to know why it went down, because for their own safety. Is the Soviet Union going to shoot civilian planes down, or is America lying? Because they're going to have people, or might have had people, on that plane or other planes. So it's to their best interest and everybody's interest, if you ride a civilian airplane, and any time a commercial airline, to find out how the government uses it for spying if it wants to, and that you are literally a sitting duck, that you are not considered a person. You are a victim of their plans to use a civilian airplane to test something that is going to happen. And if that doesn't scare you, then you've been eating too much beef with steroids in it. That's the only reason way I can account for it. Now, the London Times has two full-page stories, not just a little bit of articles. I mean, large articles on this. Interesting title. And the big black letters in the center of the story where it begins, the title is called Human Error Common, or What Really Happened to the Korean 747. And they have big black letters, like 2 or 3 inches, The Inevitable Shoot Down. Not because Russia is evil, but it was inevitable. And they have this in black letters that explains what the story is about, written by Murray Sale, S-A-Y-L-E. No incident has caused more outrage in recent years than the shooting down of the Korean 747, since all 269 passengers and crew on board were killed. But it was an event that fitted only too well with the twisted political myths of our time. It reinforced President Reagan's claim that Soviet Russia was nothing but an empire of evil. Those direct quote. At the same time, it allowed the Russians to counterclaim that the plane was on a CIA spying mission and its presence over the Soviet territory was a criminal provocation. Given all the circumstances, technical, human, political, the Korean jet was doomed within a few minutes of its takeoff. Now, that is the Sunday London Times, and for some of you who are serious researchers, I can copy this for you. It takes a lot of time, but it's worth it if you want to own it. I'll copy them for you. It's several large pages, and I've outlined the article, give you the essence of the article. Given Ronald Reagan and the political myths, the twisted political myths of our time, and Ronald Reagan's claims, they began this extensive research. Now, the highlights of the article are this, that there was a major overhaul of that airplane August the 10th, 3 weeks before the shootdown, which is interesting because I don't know what you do to cars or planes or if that had anything to do with it, but the flight originated at Kennedy Airport. It used the American Airlines terminal. It originally was flown by Lufthansa in 1972, had its major overhaul 3 weeks early. There's a class action suit that I mentioned before to you on the air that the U.S. government is a defendant on the grounds of alleged inadequate navigational aids and supervision on their route over the North Pacific. Boeing, Litton Industries are named because they made the one made the plane and one made the navigation equipment. And Jepson Sanderson Incorporated, the map publishing firm, is sued because their air map does not specify that when you fly over Soviet territory, you may be fired without warning. They don't have to give you any warning. The United States government air maps and United States pilots know that. The pilot for the president of South Korea, a military pilot with the Korean CIA, had military maps, so he knew it. He's not a man that didn't work for the military. Somebody who's been with friend who flies TWA, he's been there 20, 30 years, but he wasn't flying these planes such as the pilot of this plane. 200 passengers were listed. There were 269 died, so there had to be a crew of 69 or some we don't know about. Larry McDonald, of course, the controversial person, congressman from the John Birch Society, according to this article, was a member of a group of congressmen invited by the Asiatic Research Center of Korea for their 30th anniversary. The author says he was part of a group, but if you remember my article I did for Hustler on Korean Airline 007, Larry McDonald went with a group from Congress, but he went alone. He didn't even have a buddy with him. And all the others, the violently anti-communists, and he mentions this point, Senator Jesse Helms, even more prominent conservative, Carol Hubbard, a Democrat, Senator Stephen Sims, and so forth. This staunchy anti-communist trio flew by a different aircraft. And Larry McDonald was on this plane, the one that was sent in and was doomed from the beginning, and they knew he was on it. The landing for approach and departure to the airport is laid out in magnetic headings. Now, there's a little bit of technicality that I have to go at length with you to describe what happened to the plane and also what happened to the pilot's state of mind, because I contended since my first original study of the case that he was a kamikaze, mind-controlled to just keep going straight into the territory, to not see and hear whatever happened, and he had no direction. I didn't know the mechanical problems at the time. I knew his state of mind. Now, there are two factors that keep this plane foolproof. One, you read about the INS, the Inertial Navigation System. That's carried within the aircraft. It has its own battery. But there's three of them, independent, three independent ones. They're made by Linton Industry. If one is in error, electronically, it's voted out. In other words, they don't have like two flashlights where one doesn't work and you use your second. They keep three INS systems so two can vote out that one is giving the wrong information and the other two are correct and one is off. And this, they'll not, it's foolproof, it can't really go wrong. Along with that, combined with INS is the VOR, that's the Omnidirectional Radio Beacon. It's modern, it's accurate, it broadcasts beams of radio waves, it radiates like spokes or radials. Pilots can locate within a mile, as far away as 60 miles from their transmitter, and it's highly accurate, used near major airfields. It's the radio beams are the VOR, and the part of the navigational system in the airplane is the INS, and combined, according to this author, this is how most pilots and co-pilots operate their equipment, and it's for complete accuracy. The human navigator can plot on charts, and that used to go wrong, the early pilots, but young pilots, the young have all been brought up on this system, all but infallible system, and this is the description of the system. The KAL had this equipment, and then the author catches himself in one sense. He says all of it was in working order. Korean pilots are finished with all these tools of the trade. But then, you read further in the article, the radio equipment, the VOR, was not working, and it has to synchronize with the INS to be accurate. So you have, it's like having tires on your car. If you have one flat, you know, they've got to all be going together. Not quite the same, because they're all similar. But the VOR and the INS have to be synchronized. Now, the Korean airline collected their flight plan. The pilot, Captain Chung Byun-in, B-Y-U-N-G, but we'll call him Captain Chun, 45 years old, as I say, one of the most experienced in all South Korea and the personal pilot for the president. The flight plan was given to them. It was prepared by Continental Airlines out of Los Angeles. Now, no connection, but I wonder about Larry McDonald and Western Goals and Los Angeles Police Department and the scandals of the LAPD, the expose of the Western Goals, and they had, partly because of that scandal, they settled out of court without going to trial with 131 plaintiffs, the links of the LAPD, the scandals of their spying and so forth, and then tying it into Larry McDonald, who soon would go down on this plane and to get attention from May until September. About him in the newspapers almost every day is an interesting fact that the plans for the navigation were set in Los Angeles, the navigational systems, and Captain Chun's responsibility is to sign it. It's a notice to the airman, which means he signed it, he studied it. NOTAMS is the system. Notice to the airman. That means I read it, it's clear, we're ready to go. They're ready to take off. But things on the ground weren't quite normal. This is the explanation of what went wrong. They first go to Bethel, B-E-T-H-E-L. That's the first leg of their journey to Seoul, South Korea. It's a small hamlet 300 miles south of Anchorage, 246 degrees magnetic, and Captain Chung has his INS ready, and he's programmed to go to Bethel to take the airline there, and he has his co-pilots who are well-experienced, and so forth. They first stop. When they get to Bethel, they turn their small rotary switch, their automatic pilot. They fly infallibly, but they have to get there, and they use that INS and the VOR. But says the author of this article, the VOR at the Anchorage airport was out of action for 12 hours that day. Therefore, Captain Chun had nothing handy to check the INS against. Now, the second part of this article next week tells how he was told that Larry McDonald was there, and later they assumed he went down and sat with him and so forth. So he knew who was on the airplane and where he was going. But at Anchorage, there was a 12-hour delay. Now, as I understand reading it earlier, his cohorts took off from the airport, and little girl was sitting on his knee and then went off to South Korea and left him. And you remember those sad stories of the people at the airport? Well, it worked for them, but it didn't work for him. For 12 hours, this person is saying that Chung had to accept the fact either to go or not to go because the VOR radio work wasn't done. He had to get to Bethel first, where there was a functioning VOR, that's the radio signal. He could pick it up and synchronize it to his navigational system once he got the few hundred miles down there, but otherwise he'd be out of range until he just got that short distance. One of the notices he signed for at Anchorage, when he was informed that the VOR was not working, was that he had an hour to resolve this. He had choices. He could ask the tower to tell them where the radar image showed him the correct bearing, but he didn't ask them for that. He knew his bearing wasn't right, and before he signed it, he had 1 hour to decide what to do. And this article says he had this hour. This isn't uncommon. Well, you see how many planes have crashed since then, so it's pretty uncommon. And there were instructions to him, implied, cryptic instructions, telling him, proceed to Bethel when able. It didn't say, don't proceed to Bethel until the radio part is synced. It said, proceed to Bethel when able. And as I say, his possibilities are to wait until he got the right bearing. He could have used his INS to help him get the bearing. He could have used the NDB, the non-directional bearing, going over Karen Mountings halfway to Bethel to get a check. And when closer to Bethel, he hoped to capture the radial check to get things synchronized so he could proceed on his way safely. And as I say, I'm not aware that any other planes leaving Anchorage that day didn't arrive where they were going. And if you tell me they smashed up, I'd like to know which ones they were. So the conclusion is that when this huge plane with 269 people and controversial Larry McDonald, whose name was on the front page of the Washington Post August the 18th, and it regards that lawsuit in Los Angeles and his links to the military and the mafia and the hit teams and the Munich assassins, this controversial guy is going to be on a plane where the pilot is going to carry a magnetic compass to steer this huge plane. Now, there's a radio tower dialogue between Chung, the pilot, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is his last talk with Anchorage. And they told him to try to get close to Bethel to capture his appropriate radial signals that sink in. And they hand him over from the local controller in Anchorage to the Air Route Traffic Control Center, which is to supervise all traffic over the North Pacific. The supervisors are radar installation at a place called Kenai, K-E-N-A-I, south of Anchorage. Now, the VOR isn't working. He is deviating from his track, and Kenai radar picks up that he's off course 10 minutes out of Anchorage, Alaska. He's going off course. He ends up 359 miles inside the Soviet Union, but within 10 minutes of Anchorage, he is headed in the wrong direction. It reminds me of the example I always give about people trying, when they're playing pin the tail on the donkey when you're younger, and if somebody's honest and you're blindfolded and you hold that tail, you have a chance of maybe sticking the tail and the pin into the butt of the donkey. But if somebody's unkind and turns you a little the other direction, you can walk into a garage or car and everyone else stands there laughing and you won't hit your mark by a long shot, depending which way you're spinning. 10 minutes out of Anchorage, Alaska, the Air Route Traffic Control Center notices that he is already off course, but they were not notified of the difference. So one problem was the VOR wasn't working. Two, he within 10 minutes, he's off course. Three, they weren't notified, and the crew was not alerted. This is in the article in the London Times. They said the deviation wasn't considered a more than a minor one, that he was off course. Now, the fourth point is that he passes Bethel, the Korean airline. It was 12 miles off track at that point, just a few hundred miles south. The information that he was off track came from the American military radar station at the King Salman Islands, 200 King Salman Station, 220 miles southwest of Anchorage. It was part of the military knew the plane was off course, but they also did not alert them that the plane was off because they handle military planes and not civilian. Now, if it was a military plane, he would know which one it was flying. And if it was a civilian, he'd know they shouldn't be there because if it isn't the usual route for civilian planes going to South Korea or anywhere else, they might ask somebody else in the military to alert that this particular plane, or what is the plane, and because it just left Anchorage, you'd find out it's a 747 with 269 civilians. So the radio tower was out in Anchorage, the VOR system. The route traffic control center let them go and knew they were 10 minutes out of Anchorage, that they were deviating. They were 12 miles out over Bethel, and the American Pentagon did not tell them they were off course because they're not part of the civil air traffic control system. There's the military and the civil. When you want a civil airplane to be blown up, in the military operation, you call it a civilian flight. But when you put military people on it, such as the pilot for the president of South Korea and the Korean CIA and Army, and he's flying this plane with 268 other schnooks who don't know the difference, who are getting their pillows and blankets and ready to settle down and sleep, and they're sitting on a plane with Larry McDonald, and this article says that their error was made right from the start. They could not have been flying on a radio broadcast from Bethel with the VOR, there's no way, nor could they have been engaged into the INS system, or it would have brought the aircraft directly over Bethel and the errors would have been changed. The airplane was steering the Korean airline. It had to use a simple magnetic compass. It had a rendezvous with disaster. Unknown to the crew of the airliner, the cabin staff was distributing pillow and blankets that night. The Red Army was testing new weapons. Their radar would be picked up. They'd pick up the Korean airline as it slides in. This doesn't yet link it to the 135, but here goes our Korean airline just over the newly fortified Kamchatka Peninsula. Kamchatka. Bye-bye, American Pie. Remember that song? Bye-bye, Larry McDonald. Alone on that plane. Now, why was he alone? Why weren't those other people? It had to be arranged some way, or maybe he was told with Captain Chun and the gang that because you're such a great anti-Soviet, we'll let you see their new radar station they're testing tonight, and he thinks maybe they'll get in, and they almost got out. They did trigger off the radar. We'll do more on that next week. But it didn't stand a chance, but the important thing was that the obituaries were written for him. The next day, I saw who wrote them, and we'll do some of that again and put it on the air. This was pre-planned, and the 12 hours out in Anchorage, letting him leave with this, they could have kept the congressman for the next flight. You remember the flight before and the flight after and the flights ever since got there, so I'm sure the meeting in South Korea would have been done well without him. So getting back to what the gentleman said who wrote this article in the London Times, considering, paraphrase it, the sleazy arrangements of Ronald Reagan, he says, this event fitted only too well with the twisted political myth of our time, myths, plural. It reinforced Ronald Reagan's claim that Soviet Russia was nothing but an empire of evil, and now poor General Romanov, who's dead, can't live to say, I told you so, but there will be other people to take on the struggle to show the lies that our government does in order to prepare us for World War III. This is Mae Bressel. I'll be back with you again on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Read those newspapers. Thank you for sending me so many articles, books, information. I really appreciate it. Your listeners are great, and I'm using the material. If you notice, frequently, I save it, and when it's appropriate, I use it. I don't use it the next week always, but it's there ready to be used, and thanks a lot for that. I'll be back with you next week, and in the meantime, take care.